everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Program meant to bring you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And following up on what we've just been listening to, how lucky, how fortunate I am to have as my guest in the studio an old friend, Dr. Judy Kuryansky. Judy has had more experience with radio than God, I think.
He broadcasts, but in a different way.
You got to listen with different equipment.
There you go.
And Judy and I have we've shared some radio experiences, mm-hmm. and also on top of that, Judy's doing some work with she teaches sexuality. She's taught about sexuality and written how many books?
Oh, about 10, including the Complete Idiot's Guide to a Healthy Relationship and Complete Idiot's Guide to Dating, a lot of Idiot's Guide and an Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex and. Of that ilk.
And you call it an idiot's guide because?
Because it's simple. At the beginning, I didn't really like the word idiot either. And then when our former mayor, Rudy Giuliani, used to use the word idiot all the time, I thought, well, maybe it's not such a bad word. It basically means that it's a simple guide. That means that you've got everything you need to know about how to really perform tantric sex, how to have a healthy relationship, a lot of quizzes, a lot of to-dos, a lot of homeworks. Because many two things are theoretical. You know, be more sensitive. Well, how? Well, this is how you be more sensitive. Well, tantric sex, you hear about that. Well, how do you actually do it? You look in deep into each other's eyes.
Also in the studio with me is Stephanie Donbro, also a sex therapist. So we've got two sex therapists. And Stephanie and I have been going over the work of David Snarsh recently, so I kind of like this difference in opinion. Stephanie, just a quick bottom line difference. What's the David Snarsh approach to a more passionate marriage?
I think David says that we really don't get very passionate about sex until we're in our 50s and 60s. And this whole idea of being very adult and taking charge of your sexuality and going at it from a different perspective where you're thinking about, obviously, your mate, but you're also really, really more in tune with yourself first. That's the message.
So he says be in tune with yourself first, but I think very clearly Snarsh's message is let the primitive come out.
Correct.
Let the basic come out.
Mm-hmm. Basic, now, raw.
Basic, raw, mm-hmm. Don't think about it too much. And intimacy, I think, according to Snarsh, who's the more popular the more recent popular theorist, that the intimacy will emerge from the passion being consummated by a natural flow of almost your animal nature, I think he says.
Yes, yes.
Is that right?
Right.
I don't think that's totally true, and I can say that because David and I went to high school together, of all things, so we go back a long way, and I think some people need to learn how to be intimate in the same way as women learn to have orgasm. This doesn't always come naturally. You learn how to play a sport. You build up your muscles to work out, and you build up your love muscles and your intimacy muscles as well by doing certain practices, that it doesn't just pop out of being primitive. He puts on his grrr and goes and takes her for a quickie, and out of that comes intimacy? Please. I don't think that's true. I've been a sex therapist for many, many years, since the early days. I was the protege of the Masters and Johnson, who were the grandfather and grandmother of sex therapy, now both dead. And I was a kid at that time when I got swept into that scene. And you do have to learn how to be close. And there are specific things you do. Like, you sit with your, when you feel the urge to have sex, you can sometimes just rush and go do it and have a quickie. I'm not against that. But if you want to learn how to be intimate, then you sit with the sexual energy as it bubbles up from wherever it comes. If it's coming from your loins or your sex organs or your penis or your vagina or the fingertips or something, you sit with it and feel how it's exploding, just like lighting up, setting an ignition to explode something, and you let it build inside and feel the emotions.
Well,
you don't just rush and go do it all the time.
You're saying mainly that's for men. You're saying men have got to let it boil because women know how to let it boil.
Yes, and
women by nature have this you know, this ebb and flow to their bodies and this heat that grows naturally, I think.
Yes, they do.
You're saying men have to be trained.
Yes, and I think women have to be trained too, to come the opposite way. I'm a firm believer that two trains, by the way, have to meet in the middle. That I've often been very upset with thinking, oh, well, it's all, let's man bash now and say, oh, the men need to be more sensitive. The women need to rush up a little bit. So
well,
the men need to slow down. Well, the women need to learn how to move into that quick space, how to make love like a man does, how to be more physical, how to, instead of just generating the energy everywhere, to be focused on their genitals, too. So I think they need to meet the middle. So it's really an even Steven. Some of the problems that men have is that women are just too yin, as we call it in the Eastern way. I was telling you, Armand, I've spent a lot of time in China. So yin is the femaleness, that, you know, the daintiness that talks very soft and needs the slow, long touches. Well, they need to know how to pick up the pace, step on the accelerator to 65 instead of going 40 or staying at 50.
Well, yeah, but what, I mean, what if you're a psychologist too, you know? So what if a person feels timid? Are you saying, oh, if you feel timid, do away with all your psychological problems, step up the pace and become aggressive?
Well, yes, and I work with people on getting over being timid. What is timidness? So I'll ask.
Fear.
Fear. What are you afraid of? We just follow the line. What are you afraid of?
Is this what the Gestalt approach to?
Well, the Gestalt approach is very interesting. I'm mentioning that because I work at the Gestalt Center, and we're doing this workshop about Gestalt and sex next weekend. And I'm a Gestalt therapist from a long time ago. And this Fritz Perls, who's very famous about it, was really the father of Gestalt therapy. The funny technique about this Gestalt, which everyone who's listening now can use this. I use this in therapy a lot. It's a tool. And anybody, you don't have to be a Gestalt therapist. Therapist to do. It's like my favorite part of it is talking to the parts of yourself. So let's say and I use this on the radio a lot too. Let's say the man's having a problem with an erection. So I would say, talk to your penis. If your penis could talk, what would it say? That's a Gestalt technique. Talk from your body parts. And
what do they frequently answer?
Well, they frequently answer, you're not treating me well, or I don't like what's going on, or why are you pushing me so hard, or stop grabbing me all the time, or why do you think I have to stand up and be counted constantly? So it's a very good technique. And then we get even further beyond that to things like, well, the man is getting a message from somewhere. Many times, if the man has a sexual problem or the woman does, we could trace it back to what I always go there. You know, what was it like with your father? So we use the chair technique. Anybody who's listening can think about this. Go look at an empty chair. It's called the empty chair. And put someone there from who's significant in your life.
Imagine someone sitting in that chair.
Exactly. And talk to that person. Imagine them. This gives you a chance to really get rid of the feelings without having to confront the person. Because I always say, this stops you from having to go tell the person, how dare you? You know, you were a rotten dad or whatever. You don't have to. You do it in the room into your chair or your couch or your pillow or whatever. And you imagine your father there, and then you say, okay, what would you say to your father? And so the man who's having an erection problem might say, dad, you know, you were always a rotten dad. You were never there for me. You always cheating on mom, and I always felt so horrible not telling her. And so that purges the feelings without having to tell his father. I mean, maybe his father's dead, or maybe he just, you know, can't communicate with him or shouldn't in the real life. So that's one of the Gestalt techniques, and it is phenomenally successful and helpful. I have women do that a lot with their...
You're going to be showing some of that technique related to sexuality during your workshop.
Oh, absolutely.
So it sounds to me very much, Judy, I mean, you're a strong person, obviously. You're a forceful person, obviously. It seems to me that what you would be doing is talking to men who don't combat you, but who are willing to listen to you and follow you. And we're looking for a man... Men very often would hear you talk, and they would say, yay, get away, you're talking too aggressively to me. You know, and they would just put you back, you know. They would say, no, don't talk to me that way. I need to be treated a little more gently.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, nah, the hell with that. I'm going right for you. I'm going after you. I'm going to show you your stuff whether or not you defy me. Is that the Judy Kuryansky approach?
Well, sometimes I do that, Armand, and sometimes I don't. I will change my tune according to what is appropriate for the person. Sometimes I'll go for the jugular and just tell the truth. And it's fine.
But you're mostly known for going for the jugular and telling the truth. I mean, that's your radio personality. You're a truth teller. I mean...
And you know something? If the man is angry with me, that's fine. Because I, as you know, as the therapist, you are representative of other things and other people. So there again comes in the Gestalt technique. Okay, you're perceiving me as something. Was this your mom who never spoke up, by the way? And that's why you and your penis are angry at women? Or was this your mom who was too assertive and pushed your dad around and you're mad at her? So put your mother in the chair over there in the empty Gestalt chair.
So, Judy, nobody ever gets mad at you because you got that technique.
Right.
Any time. Don't get mad at me. It's
right.
Not me.
Get mad at the chair.
Get mad at the chair. I'm not even sitting here.
Right.
So it's great. So this kind of activity. Now, you do this work and you do individual work with people, right? In the same... if you're seeing couples, do you usually find that you have the very same problem with couples, that there's a lack of sensitivity? Because you're really teaching sensitivity through a very aggressive style. You're teaching people to be sensitive, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like an anathema, contradiction in terms there, but yes. And with couples, actually, I will do the same thing. I use that same technique that if he's spitting at her or she's spitting at him, well, you never pay attention to me. You're always, you don't do anything to help the kids, and this is always a typical. I hear it all the time. And then I'll say to her, well, who are you really hearing? Who's really in your head? And then she may reflect and say, oh, well, that's what my mother said to my father. So I deflect it away from him and say, okay, then let's listen to your father talking to your mother. Why do you have to repeat this in your life now? And so then I have them imagine. There's more than two people in the room, you see. We get a crowded room of people. But that's because we have a crowded room of people in our head. And so you want to get those voices out. It's in psychology, you know this, Armand, because you're very experienced. The techniques are called different things. It's called voice dialogue in one way. You know, it could be gestalt, as I call it. And we have different voices. You know who the most common voices people have is the critic. How many people have a critic in this room? I'll admit to mine. You know, you didn't do this right, or how come you didn't do this better, or you could have said that right, or why'd you do that? And all these things is the one little voice in our head that says that. So you externalize the voice and say, okay, put the critic up there. What is the critic saying to you?
So part of your work is to find the different voices that a person carries around. I think you said there's a lot of people in the room. You know, there's always a lot of people in the bed, too.
Thank you. That was brilliant. There are many people in the bed having sex, not just the two partners.
There's mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, past lovers.
Past lovers. Oh, my goodness. Turn the mattress over. when you get out of a relationship, by the way, you should really get a new mattress because that person's energy is in the mattress.
What if you buy a used mattress and you get somebody else's energy?
I wouldn't recommend it.
See, new mattresses only. Well, what if you got somebody who's very lonely? You know, why don't you give me a used mattress, man?
Take one from someone who said good energy.
You know, I've heard that, by the way. I've heard from someone, get a new mattress every 2 years. And I know it sounds silly.
No,
but there is something to it that's kind of amazing. So I think.
Yeah, and change your room. You know, that's part of, this is a very psychological principle, that there are cues that we have that are hidden in it could be a piece of jewelry that an ex gave you. That person's energy is in that jewelry. You know, the ancient Egyptians felt that way. They were buried with all their belongings because their energy was in it to go on to the next life. So some of those ancient ideas remain with us. So just put them in a closet and then, you know, change over your life when you're getting rid of a past lover, particularly. And then, you know, I'm sure you've talked about these sorts of things before, but I'm very holistic, besides being gestalt. So I take and pick and choose from a toolbox of every little thing that can be helpful. And by the way, bottom line, you know this, Armand, that anything works to solve your sex problems. You can, you know, to have better orgasm, longer erections, whatever it is, if you believe it. So, you know what? We could sit here and we could say, you know, change your mattress And if you believe that that's going to help you, it's going to help you. So from feng shui, for example, I actually just wrote a column about feng shui and sex. And if the feng shui, who is the ancient art of placement in things, from that point of view, if you want to have better sex, you should always have two things in your bedroom. Like, you should never have a picture of one thing. Wait, oh, you have two. You've got two owls. Are these owls or parrots?
Parrots.
Parrots. Two parrots. Now, some people could say one parrot would have been enough, but no, you have a pair. But that would be a significance of a good, inviting the energy of a good relationship in here. There's two chairs sitting over here, so that would be right. So in the bedroom, you would have two, you want to have always two night tables. You want to have pictures of twosomes. If somebody likes, sailing, don't put a picture of a ship on rocky waters in the bedroom.
Or put two ships.
Two ships, right. Not passing in the night.
Judy, I'm curious about a few different problems that people are confronted with sexually.
Yes.
The greatest one, I think, is sexual apathy.
I mean,
people just become, after a while, they're married to each other, or they're in a relationship, and one or the other goes flat. Now, inevitably, I've found, and I don't know if you agree with this, that when one person loses sexual interest in the other, the person who loses the sexual interest is usually a person who is not good at expressing anger, and that very same person is kind of shutting down their bodies because they're angry at their partner.
Mm-hmm.
And the partner doesn't have to do anything wrong, you know? I mean, it could just be a matter of you don't know what it's like to be married. Now suddenly you're accountable to somebody, and you don't like being accountable, so you get angry, but it's not reasonable to get angry because you know being married means you're going to be accountable, and then you shut off sexually.
Do you find
sexual apathy a significant problem?
You just made a perfect analysis of exactly what sexual apathy is. That it's definitely
anger.
Hidden feelings, and often anger. It's a big one that people are afraid when they're within a relationship to express that kind of anger. So, you know, there are techniques to do that. Some of them are very simple behavioral techniques where you don't let the molehill grow into the mountain by having what's called gripe sessions. So you would put aside 20 minutes, once a week at least, if not two, and say, okay, it's 10 minutes for you, what are your gripes? 10 minutes for me, it's what are my gripes, and then we each listen. And that way it doesn't build, because what you just said, Armand, when it builds to real anger, it's that the gripes have not been said.
Well, that's really easier said than done, because what 10 minutes of gripes will do is trigger a reaction. You have to really teach people to learn to hear gripes.
Yes, of course, yes.
You know, you have to teach a person to learn to hear it, meaning...
Right.
And I guess learning to hear it means you don't react when you hear it.
Yeah, right. You don't say, no, you're wrong, stop there, what do you mean, I didn't do that. Yeah.
How could you say that?
Right.
What's wrong?
Okay,
so
what technique do you use for that?
Well, I would imagine that what you do is you teach a person to listen, but to listen for this as an experience that the other person is having and not necessarily an accurate experience. So if someone is saying, I'm angry at you because you always come home late, it doesn't mean that you have to come home on time.
Right.
It means that this disturbs the other person and you want to hear it and you want to know that. Then you could always make your choices.
Excellent. You're a good therapist. That's exactly right. Active listening is what it's called, that you listen without judgment, without butting in. There's actually a new trend now that I'm very keen about. It's all what you've said packaged in a particular kind of way in steps, and it's called nonviolent communication.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Marshall Rosenberg.
Marshall Rosenberg. We've had him here. Yeah.
Oh, right. And I'm very keen about it now because I've just finished editing an academic book about achieving peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis from a psychosocial point of view, and obviously listening techniques has a lot to do with it. Dialoguing is the most important thing between the Arabs and the Jews, and this is what happens in couples. You need to dialogue and listen, and the four steps are that you really state when – it's very simple. Everybody could use this even right now. You start out with when you, and then specify what it is the person is doing. So when you don't come home on time, let's say, and fill in the blank. I feel, and then you say what you feel. You fill in the blank, all kinds of emotions. And that leads to, and then you say what that is. And what I would request is, and you make a request. So those four steps, very simple. Active listening, you know, however you want to call it. But it gets people not to freak out when they hear something.
He's got a wonderful, that little book, the Nonviolent Communication book by Marshall Rosenberg, is really wonderful because it really, it's an outline. It's beautiful. It's
makes it very,
it's simple. We have it here, I think. One of the other things that we've seen, now this is on the other side of it, this goes back to what you were saying, Stephanie, about the passionate relationship. One of the things we found that works for sexual apathy is a very silent pillow fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we'll have people do, because we have soundproof rooms here, you know, mm-hmm. we have these bataka bats.
Yeah, the bataka bats, right.
And we would have people have a pillow fight without words.
Mm-hmm. That's
just
good.
Just using sounds. And it has the same effect as being able to state all your gripes. In fact, when people do it, and as I said, it's a pillow fight. It's a soft pillow fight.
Uh-huh.
There's something about the aggression that needs to be manifested in order for people to reignite their sexual apathy, because it seems like the sexual apathy is a deadening of the aggressive system.
Mm-hmm.
And if what we need in sex is to have some aggression mixed in with, you know, the passion and the receptivity, you've got to somehow wake up that aggression. And if a person is burying their anger, they bury that aggressive
mm-hmm.
self. So pillow fights are a very, and it's a very useful tool. I usually recommend that the man, who's usually the larger of the two, use only his left hand in a pillow fight,
right.
on the pillow, and his right hand's behind his back,
mm-hmm.
and the woman use both hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they just haul off and whack each other with pillows. And even though it sounds like violence, it's kind of a very funny thing until the feathers break.
That's great. I think that's great. That's a really fun, it can turn into a fun thing. You transform the energy that way, and that sounds like a really good thing, and you get some of the angry feelings out. I could see where that would work, because it's a physical manifestation of some of the emotions instead of forcing people to actually say, I'm so pissed at you I could break your head, you know. So that's a definitely a good technique. And doing pillows is better than smashing something, your fist against the wall,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Hurting each other.
Yeah, there's many things in the tantric tradition, which I've been doing a lot of teaching of, which mixes the Gestalt techniques that we're actually doing this workshop about, couples really need to also play together besides acting out different emotions. And this requires suspending your fear of doing things like singing a song in each other's ear. Don't worry, you're not a singer. Just hum some tune. Don't worry, you have no words. It doesn't matter. You're just vibrating your sound into your lover's ear. And it creates this incredible kind of intimacy, just those simple, I'm thinking behavioral techniques since you brought that one up. Dancing in front of each other. There's a whole chapter in The Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex, which is an astounding way of all these different techniques to create intimacy together. One partner just sits on the, reclines on the couch, and the other person dances. Now, you don't have to be a dancer. In fact, that's the point. Don't think you have to act a certain way, but express yourself physically. And magical things happen.
You know, the old Masters and Johnson's mutual massage is never lost when it's brought into a relationship. It's like kind of an amazing thing.
Yes. Mutual massage is a wonderful technique. And so was their sensate focus, which is very basic to all sexual problems, solving erection problems, orgasm problems, sexual apathy that you're mentioning, Armando, all of it is that touching and being touched. And I always ask people, people can do it, listeners can do it right now, is to put their thumb, their left thumb, and rub it in their right palm. And as you do that, experience and think, are you feeling your thumb doing the touching of your palm? So rub your left thumb into your right palm. Are you feeling your thumb doing the touching of your palm, or are you experiencing your palm being touched by your thumb? Which one?
I got both.
You got both? Oh, well, you have both too? All right, we have two advanced people in the studio here.
Oh, because
here.
Usually what you... Well,
very few people say
I'm
they
sorry,
have both.
I didn't mean to do that. Okay, I only feel my thumb.
You, really, it is advanced. The point, we're getting to that point. Most people will say they either feel their thumb doing the touching, which means that they are more comfortable being the giver of the touching, and they need to learn then to receive the touching. touching.
Well, that's beautiful.
To feel the touching. And the other person, there are, and then there are some people who feel their palm being touched, which means that they can feel being touched, which is wonderful, but they don't experience the other person touching, which, and the point is to get to the balance where you can both feel the being touched and the be the touchy and the toucher.
Very nice. So with your thumb of your right hand, you rub the palm of your left hand.
Either one, yeah.
Or vice versa, right? Doing it the other way.
Right.
I wonder if it feels different.
Well, it does oftentimes, which is why I did it with the more receptive finger. Right. But you could do, you could see, in fact, that's another way.
Well, what
an
about
extension.
This receptive finger versus the non-receptive finger? You think fingers have certain receptivity?
Yeah, well, that comes from really the tantric tradition. And I do believe that there is some validity to that. Different parts of our body have different energetic fields that they give off, and the fingers are really meant for different things. It's like, why do we put a ring on a fourth finger? Well, this is ancient tradition that finger that we put our marriage bands on is actually the finger of the more united finger than any of the other fingers. So fingers do have, and the way, if you are going to touch your partner's body, you will communicate different energy through the different fingers. So this is a very interesting thing. If people are going to touch their partner's sexual parts, either rub her breasts or actually touch genitals, you should experiment then with which fingers you do some more of the touching with. Like make a ring with the pinky and the thumb, with the middle finger, and see how it feels different.
You actually ask your partner which one feels better to you.
Yes, and see which one you feel a different energy. There's some of that is going to be a stronger energy, and some of it's going to be a much more receptive, kind of quieter energy.
You find the, you know, I remember Fritz Perls used to talk about the difference between the right side of the body and the left side of the body.
Yeah.
The right side being more aggressive, mm-hmm. and the left side being more receptive.
Yes, this is, you know, Fritz Perls, who is, of course, the father of Gestalt therapy, which is part of the chair technique we talked about before, is indeed related to the ancient Indian techniques, the tantric sex techniques that I was mentioning before. And that I've put together in the Idiot's Guide to Tantric Sex that actually say the same thing, that the one part of the body is the right side is the more assertive, reaching out, and the left side is the more receptive. And so if you are going to look into deep into each other's eyes, you look into the left eye because that's the more receptive one. But I don't want people to get too hung up on that. Those are kind of advanced things you could play with and see what works, you know, well for you. There is some physiology to it, however, because different parts of the body are related to different sides of the brain, aren't controlled. So this is not just our airy-fairy ancient, you know, Eastern mm-hmm. techniques. So, for example, if you whisper into the left ear, it's going to go more into the right side of the brain, where if you were doing that, the guy would be thinking, does she really mean this? Does this mean I have to have sex with her? Do I have to last a long time? And if you whisper the sweet nothings into the left ear, it'll go to the right side of the brain, and he'll be thinking, did I say that right? He'll be thinking, you know, oh, that feels
so
good. More softer.
The better ear to whisper sweet nothing? Well, the right ear for the left brain, right?
The left ear for the right brain, because the left ear would trigger the right brain, which is the more romantic side of the brain.
So always talk in your partner's left ear. It's one of our
whispering
hints.
Whispering,
and in case people can't stay with us today, it's going to be at the Gestalt Center.
It's at the Gestalt Center, which is at 225th Avenue, and the phone number there is 387-9429. It's next Saturday.
We're going to take next Saturday, meaning the one coming up?
Not the one coming up, the one after that. The 14th.
The 14th. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then more with Judy Kuryansky.
This is WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Reverend Jesse Jackson. Please call and support WBAI, Non-Commercial Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
percussion, percussion in D minor, classical music in with a Cuban flair. And my guest here at the studio, in case you just tuned into this wonderful music, Dr. Judy Kuriansky and Stephanie Dombra, both sex therapists who have worked with some of the issues that people deal with. Judy Kuriansky is with us through the good graces of the Gestalt Institute, excuse me. And Judy, it's really fun to have you here. Stephanie, while we were off air, there was that interesting dialogue that took place about what women want from men. Right, we're going to go back to this Narshian point of view. What's your perception? I want to hear Judy's response.
Well, what I have found professionally and personally is that with women these days, you know, they've achieved a lot. They're much stronger. They've learned how to assert themselves. And in one area of their life, they would really actually like to not be in control. And so what I've heard is that women say, you know, I want a strong man. I want someone to take charge and do this, and especially in the bedroom, in the sexual arena. I want someone to, quote, unquote, take me. And I don't want this wishy-washy thing. And I will even work with men. I don't put either one down. I say, let's talk about what's going to work for you. And I know there are men that say, you know what, I do have to find my voice. I do have to find my strength. And I'll work with them. What's been your experience with that?
Yes, that actually was the most popular fantasy that women had years ago. It was called the rape fantasy in the literature and in conferences and everything, because it was take me, wildly just run in the door, grab me, throw me down on the bed, you know, rip off my clothes and just take me. And then, of course, that fell terrifically out of favor, particularly because of the word. It got changed to what's called the submission fantasy, which was for a very long time the top of the list of whenever surveys were done. Then for a period of time that changed, and it slipped down the list, and women wanted to be in control because that was a way of overcoming the fact that they had been submissive in all parts of their life. So now what's happening is that it's evening out. So while Stephanie, you're right that there are a certain group of women for whom that is very true, what you described, it's much more across the board that there are women who want to be in control when they feel they have not asserted their entire control. And then you're talking about a subsample of a group of women who feel like they are in control in the life and they're vice presidents of the company, and so when they get home they want to just, you know, have a guy take them. But guess what? There are guys who feel that way too.
Yes, that's,
and this runs
true.
The range. For
they
the
want
men.
The guys who want to have a guy take them when they get home?
The guys who want to have either a guy or a woman take them when they get home, because they are full of it from having been in control all day. And this is why you have those scandals in Washington.
Isn't it amazing?
It explains, and the scandals in the parliament in Britain as well, where we read about them even more. Oh, the this PM, member of parliament, MP, was found in women's garters and, you know, being whipped and chained, and even we've had these situations in Washington. And that's because they're deeper issues, obviously. I mean, as an analytic person, we can go deeper. But on the surface, it has also to do with one part of their life, which is they're in control all the time. And then they want somebody to be in, and they're mean to people in their life. And so then they want to turn the tables. It's called reaction formation.
Yeah, who was it? The happy hooker, was it in Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Washington, D.C.? The one who wrote about
all the powerful men.
All the powerful men who came to for submissive sex.
Yes, submissive
they
sex.
They wanted to be dominated. They wanted to be taken.
Exactly.
So I think what you're saying, yeah, Stephanie, is that when a woman spends her time exerting herself continuously over and over again, she wants to find a place where she could surrender. And surrender is frequently available through a sensual experience. Surrender means I want to let it go. I'm tired. I just want to let it down, you know. And every dominant being in the planet, and I'm sure you too, Judy, look for a time when you could sink into the bathtub and, you know, and just, you know, let something take over.
Right.
So it's, most dominant people just grab a quick shower, but it's that bathtub becomes appealing. And similarly, having someone take charge is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
Don't you find that to be true?
Yes.
I mean, what about your personal experience? Do you always find that? Don't you wish that there's people around who are strong enough to handle? Like our experience right now of doing this program, we're equals doing this.
Right.
And you delight in it. You know,
yes.
I delight in it with you.
Yes.
It's something nice to be able to meet someone who you can match.
That's very, very true. And that is the essence, really, of a healthy relationship, finding out what that balance is. So being equals, that's my choice, and it's obviously your choice, too, in terms of being equals. Some people find the balance in a different way. One person's stronger, the other person is naturally more of a follower, and one person's more of a leader. And if that's their balance and it works for them, okay. I actually have couples do a technique with that, and I do this in my classes at Columbia where I teach too, and I do it even in the Gestalt and Sex workshops that I'm constantly doing, where I have one person be the leader and march in a certain way. I say, okay, person with the shorter hair, you're the guy, you're the leader now, and you march, and the other person in the couple has to follow. Exactly what you do. You move your arms the way they move, you move your head, your legs, you know, whatever they're going to do, and do it exactly the way they do it. And you get the sense of, I'm the leader and I'm the follower. And then you switch. And then the person becomes the leader and the other person becomes the follower. And they get a sense, really physically, even like you were saying before in the pillow fight, the sense of taking one role to the extreme and the other role to the extreme and then switching.
And there's a kind of a beauty in it. There's another called the master-slave game where,
yes,
where you give people
a
certain period of time.
That's wonderful.
And you say, I'm the master and you're the slave.
Right.
And then you reverse those roles.
Right.
But the what people find is that in the follower position, they love the loss of responsibility.
Yes.
They love, I don't have to figure anything out. I just have to do exactly what you say.
Right.
And there's something beautiful in that for many people.
Yes, that's right. That is very true. That's said perfectly. Giving up that need to be the one who's always in control and giving yourself up to somebody.
Hey, maybe we've got time. You know, next week I'm told we're going to be having some hearings. And I think if we can, we could take some phone calls today. At 212-209-2900, I know you love phone calls.
Yes, you've always been great on the air with people. 20-some ideas.
And next week, you know, for all you WBAI listeners, we will not be with you because they're going to be broadcasting the hearings. We'll be back the following week. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we will not be here. So maybe we can get some of your voices on the air with us. We're going to take a very short musical break so we can go to our needed materials. We'll be right back with you. Dancing for your partner. What a nice idea.
Yes.
You know, more men should dance for women.
Mm-hmm.
212. Do they do that in your workshop? Do you ever get men to dance up for their women?
And the most important thing is to encourage them. They do not have to be a dancer. This is not about doing the moves like some, you know, real professional would do. This is just moving to the music, and it helps people to get into their body.
212-209-2900. Let's take a couple of your calls today. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. 212-209-2900. We'll get him. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have a problem with sexual jealousy. The person who I love, he's told me in the past that he has fantasies about another woman. He said to me, the way you reach out for me, Rose, and my fantasies, I'm reaching out for her. And every time we make love, I'm thinking about him. The more excited I get, the more tormented I get because I'm thinking that he's thinking about her, because he has told me that he does think about her.
Right. Well, the best way to handle that is in two. For you to be doing what's called thought stopping, which is every time that thought comes to your mind, you see a stop sign, you snap your fingers to do what we call interrupt. And then you switch your mind to something else, to you being with him. Because otherwise you could go on and on like that forever and ad infinitum and drive yourself crazy. That's one thing. The second thing that I think would be really good is for you to accept, you know what? People have fantasies about others, and to turn that fantasy around with him and say, what would she be doing with you right now? And that way you twist it so that he is thinking of you. It's a very interesting psychological technique of pairing so that you condition him to think about you in that way. So try those two things.
And thanks for calling in. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's try another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand. My question is this. When people have, when the two partners, one of them is more experienced, for example, in or more relationships before they get together. Now, it almost seems like they both should actually go some kind of, like, therapy just to go ahead and clear their mind out of all the previous relationships, because it seems to be so difficult for someone to adjust. And also, my second part of the question is, as far as women are concerned, are they more able to be imaginative and actually almost to the point where they almost like live a fantasy instead of the reality, and the expectations may not be as realistic? Maybe they're looking for the, you know, nice shiny armor, versus men are a little bit more grounded and physical. Is it true, or is it just my
No, I think you're right. That in fact, you've put your finger on something that's very important, and that is people constantly have this image of the perfect person instead of realizing everybody has flaws. At the same time, it's reasonable, too, to say, what are the qualities that you are really looking for, and what are your absolute no-nos? And then to see how that person fits those qualities. There's a lot of exercises in The Idiot's Guide to Dating that I wrote that are that you can help you follow those kinds of things. But expectations, as you just said, reasonably ruin a person's sex life, too. You start thinking, I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to do that, he's supposed to behave in this way, So it's up to you. Actually, you can't control other people. So, you know, you can even bring up to them, you could say, you know what, you seem to have a lot of expectations. Let's put aside our expectations for a minute and see what it's like to just be together. And he's right. Expectations are, you know, so they're so intrusive.
Thank you so much for calling in.
You're right. He's, you know, sometimes people need, I develop what's called the reassure model. Over 22 years of being on the radio, each letter stands for something. Basically, the whole word also means something, and that is that people need reassurance. They need reassurance. They're okay. Three things. They're okay, they're not abnormal, and there's some solution to what their problems are. After over 20 years of being on the radio giving advice, that's the model I developed. And, this is what this gentleman wanted.
They need reassurance.
It's reassurance that they're okay, that they're not abnormal, and that there is some help and hope for what their problem is. That's the three things, the reassurance. And then each letter stands for something. R is, of course, the reassurance. E is the encouragement to really continue with the good things that they're doing. A is for asking questions of themselves and their partner. S is for seeking support. So as it goes on, U is actually for a deeper understanding of some of the issues, because we've talked about some superficial things, but there are deeper emotional blocks that some people have. R is for referral. So every letter stands for something.
212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. We're taking our calls with Dr. Judy Kuriansky. Let's take another. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good.
I have a slight problem. I have a question for you.
Are you on a speakerphone? Can you go to a hand phone?
No, it's a cell phone. Just let me give a question to her. Can you hear me better now?
Sure, I could hear you.
Okay. Question is, my wife came from her father was a serial cheater and abuser of her mother. And, I mean, he really abused her both physically and mentally at the end of it. And my wife has some serious psychological hangouts from that. But from her, according to her, she has no problems, and she's exhibiting a lot of, I'd say, the attitudes of her father. Like, she wants to hit me and all kind of stuff. She cheated on me, so I'm thinking about the time for me to end the relationship, but just for her, I mean, how much of help does she need? I mean, how long?
Well, you know, I'm very touched that you said that, and my heart goes out to you and to her. And I, you know, it's very unfortunate because you're being the butt of really the what she's feeling. And, you know, she would benefit greatly from the Gestalt therapy that we were just talking about, because she's hitting out at you when she's really wanting to hit out at the ghosts, I call it, of her life, her father who cheated on her mother. And she's reenacting those scenes again, the ghosts from the past. And you want to get out of it because you want to say, I'm not your father. Don't treat me that way. But I have to say that women who are abused out of the many years I deal with that population have a very hard time making love with their husbands and treating their husbands in a kind way, because they remind them all the time of how mean men were to them, either they were physically or sexually or whatever abused. So I think before you dump your wife and leave the marriage, it would be good for her to have some Gestalt therapy. She should. Now, she's the perfect person, for example, to come to this workshop I'm doing next Saturday at the Gestalt Center, because those are the kinds of things that can be worked out, so that she's really not tilting at windmills like Don Quixote, but, you know, really talking to her father in this imaginary situation and not beating up on you.
That's really helpful, Judy, you know, but the problem also is that at the moment, he's ready to leave, and he's frustrated, and he's built up a lot of feelings. So maybe a couple's counseling would be advisable at the beginning, and then from there, she could go and do her work as well.
Right, because you need, very good, because you need to express some of your feeling of anger, and you're trying to protect yourself, and we respect and honor that.
So thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. As I said, we will not be with you next week with the Positive Mind, because they're going to be broadcasting some hearings. So we got a chance here to hear from more of you. 212-209-2900. Make your call right now. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Takes them a second to figure out they're on the air.
That they got through.
Right. You know, it's very unfortunate because
Hello.
Okay, we'll take this one. Yes, hi. Hello there.
Yes, hello. I'm on.
Yes.
Yes, I got two questions. One is, my partner, she's like about 15 years younger than I am. Should that be a problem with us? And the next thing is, I send you a book. I wonder, did you get that book?
Which book did you send?
It's called Negatively Positive.
No, I didn't get that book.
I sent it to the station like about 3 weeks ago.
To the station, huh? Yeah, sometimes in order to send me things, you have to send them up to my office. But I'll take a look. We have some stuff down there. We'll go there and make sure we pick it up. Because that certainly goes along with what a lot I've been saying about the negatively positive. Let's go to the first question. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 47.
So you're 47 and you're related to somebody 32 years old. Judy, what do you think? Do you think that the age difference between 47 and 32 is so big that it's insurmountable?
Not at that age. You know, it can be very big when one person's 20 and the other one is 35. But the differences wash out. It's not so much your age. What's really bugging you about the difference? Because, of course, you could like different music. You could want different things in life. That's much more important, but you could be the same age and want different things in life. Does that mean to you? Forget about the number.
Well, I know, like, recently we had a little argument, because when we met at a party, and when either one of us wants to go out with our friends or whatever, the other one is always, you know, getting upset. They're getting angry about that, you know. And I don't know.
That's not related to your age. That's related to how much togetherness you need and separateness. This is a big issue for couples, no matter how old they are or their age difference. You want to have some of your alone time with the boys, and she wants to have more of your time and togetherness time. So what I would suggest the two that you do is to figure out, first of all, make sure you tell her, yes, I love to be with you. Let's figure out some together time when we're doing something that you really love and that you feel we're really together very, very intimately and closely like you want. And then, trust me, she'll allow you to have more of your own time without trying to put a chain on you.
Yeah, because I'm working also. I work two jobs, and she's home with two children. And, you know, so sometimes she wants to go out.
Sure. She wants more of your time, and she's busy with the kids, and she wants more romancing time. So if you give her that romancing time and tell her how much you love her and spend those precious moments with her, then she'll feel that you can have some of your own time. Meanwhile, you have very little time to be together anyway. No wonder she wants more of you. So don't fight it, and it has nothing to do with your age. This has to do with the closeness, separateness issue, as it's called.
Thank you very much for calling in. I'll look for that book. I'll make sure I take a look at that. You know, Judy, I mean, you've now in this field, what, 30 years?
Yeah. 35, yeah.
35 years. 35 years of doing it. In the time that you've gone through it, I mean, you've kind of boiled it down to the primary supports that people need. I want to go back to review that again. You said they need acceptance.
I think of it actually as three A's: acceptance, acknowledgement, and appreciation.
Now let's just stick with those three for a minute. Acceptance,
acknowledgement,
and appreciation. Now, acknowledgement is a form of validation, and I think
it's
mm-hmm. not only does a therapist do that with clients, but it's what people need to do with each other.
Ah, all the time.
So what is a form? You know, validation, or what we say is acknowledgement, is such a critical thing that people overlook. If your partner has a perception, don't refute the perception. You know, I mean, people do it all the time. They get kind of sloppy, you know, like you're in your family. Somebody says they see something and you say, that's not true.
Right. Oh, all the time.
So
right.
Validation is really a critical thing.
Yeah.
Telling your partner, I validate your perception. I validate your intelligence. I validate the way you think.
Exactly.
Acceptance is I accept you the way you are, including all of your idiosyncrasies.
Right. Exactly.
And what's the third?
Appreciation.
And
showing your appreciation.
And how? What particular part of showing appreciation do people not do? I mean, they usually buy flowers, but what else could they do?
Well, then if you buy flowers and you say, I really appreciate that you were that thoughtful about me. Just saying it in those simple things. And I appreciate that you came home early. I appreciate that you called me in the middle of the day. I appreciate when you smile at me when I talk. Anything.
My guest, Dr. Judy Kuryansky. Also helping me with the production of today's program, Stephanie Dombra. Thank you, Stephanie, for being with us as well. And thank you for giving all the room.
You're welcome. It's a joy.
And, Judy, wonderful to be with you. Let me ask you, we have coming up soon is this workshop on a week after this on Saturday the 14th at the Gestalt Center, G-E-S-T-A-L-T Center.
Right.
They can find out about the workshop of Judy with her sexuality.
Yes,
and,
they can call.
It's a pleasure.
They can call 212-387-9429. That's 212-387-9429.
And in the upcoming week, if you can't hear the program because we're doing the hearings, you can go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and listen to any of our archived programs. There are so many programs up there, thanks to Tom Gerby, that you could have The Positive Mind 24 hours, 7 days a week, all over the world. Back with you in a week, my friends. This is Armand DeMille. Love to all of you, and thanks again, Judy.
positive mind.